Hello, everybody. I'm Ed Robinson, and welcome to another exciting edition of The Robinson Show. On the program, I have Joe Mullinax. Joe is the co-host of the Locked On Grizzlies podcast and columnist for Bluff City Media. These outlets cover the NBA's Memphis Grizzlies. He is also an NBA writer for the Step Back and SB Nation NBA. We discuss the current happenings with the Memphis Grizzlies, also discuss head coach Taylor Jenkins. Also, we discuss FedEx Forum, where the Grizzlies play their home games. Also, we talk about the NBA's popularity in Memphis, and of course, we talk a little bit about Ja Morant. Joe is coming up after the break. Stay tuned. You're listening to The Robinson Show.
We did it. I still can't believe we got this project done so fast and so well.
When I'm in New York,
I'm in Chicago, and I'm in LA. But
we're making it happen in Miro.
Together. Our best work just happens faster on Miro's collaborative online whiteboard. No more scheduling meeting after meeting for work that could happen from anywhere. Whether it's getting design feedback here, mapping timelines here,
or brainstorming next steps here. It all just happens on the Miro board.
Exactly. And it's nice not having to wait an entire day to get sign-off from this guy.
Hey! Well, it is true.
See how Miro users save up to 80 hours every year by meeting less and doing more. Get on board at Miro.com. The first three boards are free forever. That's Miro.com.
Bane. He ran him right out of the play. Smart play by Desmond Bane. Bane now in his third season. And he is an issue.
Yes, he is. Because he's gotten so much better at putting that ball on the floor.
Tyus Jones with Jaren Jackson running their half-court set. Of course, a great three-point shooter, Desmond Bane, and he's going to the line again. Desmond Bane trying to bang his way to it, and he got it. And great look for Bane. Wide open. Bane, he'll go to the rim. Why not? Nobody stopped him. Bane trying to get to the rim and will again. Bane and more in the paint. Bane, good bang. It'll be tapped away by Jonas just to keep it away. And now Dylan Brooks gets the triple. Second chance points. It'll be Dylan Brooks. You know he's aggressive.
He's and three of three from three.
Brooks and Trey battling through the pick. And it'll be a three-point opportunity for Dylan Brooks. Dylan Brooks in traffic with the flip.
Yeah. That's a heck of a shot by Dylan Brooks.
On the deflection, Jaren Jackson Jr. And he does not get the roll, but second chance points. You just brought it up. This young man can hit that shot all the time, and that's Jaren Jackson Jr. Toss it inside. Jaren Jackson Jr.
See, now he's going to use his physicality. This is what I'm talking about.
Jaren Jackson, he wants to go back to a strong side, doesn't he? He got the left hand, and he worked it well. He's a righty. It'll be Jaren Jackson Jr. for the floater will work. He wanted to go back to Jaren Jackson. And he'll get the layup. Bang. Thought about the three. It'll be Jaren Jackson, and he'll get the runner. Here comes that high screen for Jaren Jackson, and he got the layup out of it.
All right, everybody, welcome back to the program. That audio was courtesy of the NBA, the National Basketball Association, and Bally Sports New Orleans. Joel Myers and Antonio Daniels on the call of the game between the Memphis Grizzlies and the New Orleans Pelicans from April the 5th of 2023, and that was Desmond Bane, Dylan Brooks, and Jaren Jackson Jr. in action. To talk more about the current happenings with the Memphis Grizzlies, also to talk about Taylor Jenkins, of course, Ja Morant, and the NBA's popularity in Memphis and so much more, let's welcome him back to the program. He's the co-host of the Locked On Grizzlies podcast, which is dedicated to covering all things related to the NBA's Memphis Grizzlies. Also, he's a Memphis Grizzlies columnist for Bluff City Media and also an NBA writer for The Step Back and SB Nation NBA, Joe Mullinax. Hey, Joe, welcome back to the program, my man.
Hey, man. Thanks for having me back on. I really appreciate it. It's exciting times in Memphis as the Grizzlies get ready for the playoffs.
Thank you so much again for taking time out of your busy schedule to be with us on the program. Exciting times happening right now, not just for the Grizzlies, but the NBA as a whole as we make our way towards the end of the regular season. So, with the Grizzlies, a lot of impact players on this squad. I want to start off talking about Desmond Bane for a moment. When you talk about one of the premier sharpshooters in the NBA, one of the first names that comes to my mind is Desmond Bane. And again, another solid year for him. Give me your thoughts on Desmond and his play this season.
Well, one of the themes of Desmond Bane's season has been his ability to evolve, right? They talked about it on the audio clips that you played before I came on. The idea of him as a three-level scorer, that's a very real threat now. The idea of him as a creator off the dribble, also a very real threat, not just for himself, but for others. He can get to the basket. Downhill Dez is a new nickname that he's earned this season because he's very aggressive, very quick to the rim. He looks for his shot earlier in shot clocks, off the dribble, just him against the defender, finding space, whether it's from three, in the mid-range. He has really developed his offensive abilities. And it's been a lot of fun to watch unfold because obviously Ja Morant's had his issues this season. Other guys have been in and out of the lineup, and Bane had his own toe injury that he had to deal with. But he's still among the very best three-point shooters in the entire NBA, as you alluded to. But he's added the ability to be more than just that marksman from beyond the arc. He can create as a primary facilitator in a backup point guard, a hybridized role. He, off the ball, can make major problems for a defense. If all you do is see him as a three-point threat, he is going to hurt you, and that obviously will help the Grizzlies' offense continue to evolve as the playoffs get underway here in the next week.
Absolutely, and you mentioned that Joe Desmond's game has evolved and is going to continue to get stronger as we march our way to the playoffs. And speaking of somebody, I want to stay just with shooters for a moment. Currently leading the NBA in three-point percentage is Luke Kennard. I tell you one thing, Joe. The Memphis Grizzlies made a steal in the trade deadline in acquiring Luke from the Los Angeles Clippers. Give me your thoughts on Luke and what his contribution is to the Grizzlies in the second half of the season.
Well, if you've been following the Memphis Grizzlies as long as I have, over a decade now, I can't help but think of the grit and grind teams that desperately needed three-point shooting next to Zach Randolph and Marc Gasol and Tony Allen and Mike Conley. And both of these guys, both Bane and Luke Kennard, would have been amazing fits in that way alongside those guys, and obviously they're great fits right now. I agree with your assessment that he's kind of been the under-the-radar trade deadline acquisition. People kept asking, why isn't he being played by the Clippers? What was the problem? You see what he did with the Detroit Pistons as a secondary facilitator, not to the level of Bane, but still capable of making his own shot and creating offense for others a little bit off the bounce. Obviously, one of the very best three-point shooters in the NBA, as you alluded to. Was it defensive troubles? Had he lost a step? He's only 26 years old, so that seems silly to me. Maybe the Clippers just messed up, to be honest with you. They didn't see the value in him for whatever reason. Sometimes a change of scenery can do a world of good. And it seems like that's exactly what's happened for Kennard. Now, he's had some defensive problems at times. Those have gone away over the last couple of weeks as he's gotten more comfortable in the Grizzlies' schemes and rotations. But his ability to shoot the three, at first when he came to Memphis, he was just kind of camped out in the corner, right? And hopefully dribble penetration happens the way the Grizzlies' offense works and you kick out to the open Kennard. And his impact was not as clear because of that. But as time has gone on, they started running more sets and plays for him, coming off of off-ball screens, getting open and pick-and-pop kind of situations from three. He is really displaying his value to a Grizzlies team that, whether Steven Adams is out there or not, is going to continue to have half-court offense troubles. When those times arise, there's nothing better to help with that than to have a shooter that, at best case, is left open on dribble penetration, and you kick out for an open look from three. And as you mentioned, he's one of the best at the NBA at doing that, converting on those attempts. Or if a defender decides to stay home with the impressive shooter that is Luke Kennard, now you have more space for Ja Morant to operate in and around the paint. Now you have more room for Tyus Jones to get off one of his patented floaters or find somebody cutting on the baseline. There's so much more versatility with this Grizzlies team and offense with Luke Kennard now in the fold. So it's exciting to watch him fit in, find his space and his place, he's going to be a pretty impactful piece for them heading into the postseason.
Indeed, it's going to be impactful because we know that, as they say, offense puts butts in the seats and defense wins championships. But you got to have defense and you got to have the long-range shooting. And Luke Kennard definitely brings that to the table in Memphis. And hopefully he'll could capitalize on that as the playoffs are right around the corner. You know, we talk about, you mentioned about the absence of a three-point shooter during the grit and grind era in Memphis. Well, Ja Morant had his absence. We'll get more into him a little bit later, but someone that filled in his absence was Tyus Jones. And coming on very strong, especially in the second half of the NBA season, give me your thoughts on Tyus and his play.
He's admirable as an insurance policy, right? And he's gotten a little bit better with Ja coming back as a true reserve, second unit, leader, point guard. But where Tyus has been best this season has been his ability to fill in for Ja. Tyus, the starter, has been so much better than Tyus, the backup point guard that's getting 14 to 16 minutes a night, spelling Ja Morant. And obviously, Tyus is never going to be a starter with the Memphis Grizzlies, so you want to see him do better as a creator for that bench unit or alongside other starters in the hybridized rotation that Taylor Jenkins likes to utilize, the head coach of the Grizzlies. So I am optimistic going into the playoffs. I've seen Tyus Jones have success at that level in that backup role. But the important thing is Tyus has to be able to maintain the level of play that he does when he is a starter for this team. Everybody talked about how he's a starter in the NBA. That production is only there, at least over the course of this whole regular season, when he is, in fact, a starter. He's not bringing that same caliber of play to his reserve role. And because of that, the Grizzlies bench at times has struggled. Now there's reasons for that, right? They have rookies playing significant minutes. But Tyus and Brandon Clark, before Clark got injured in Denver, they had not had the best season together, which is pretty surprising considering how much success they had prior to this season as a pairing off the bench. So I want to see Tyus continue to be a true reserve and be able to supplement what Ja does as opposed to only being his best when Morant is not in the game at all, because obviously that's not a path for success for the Grizzlies.
All right, and then I want to talk now about a player that's, let's just say he has developed a reputation of being one of the tough guys in the NBA, I guess being an enforcer, so to speak, and that's Dylan Brooks. We know Dylan, very active on social media, having war of words with a gentleman by the name of Draymond Green. We know they don't like each other, but I guess what Draymond Green is to the Golden State Warriors, Dylan Brooks is to the Memphis Grizzlies. Give me your thoughts on Dylan in his 2022 season.
Dylan is very much that guy that you love to have on your team and you hate when he's not on your team, when you're having to play against him. He is very much that. And you mentioned it in a similar capacity to what Draymond Green brings to the Warriors. Dylan has been a roller coaster. He's been quite the ebbs and flows kind of player in terms of his defense being fairly consistent, his physicality, the way that he plays with an intensity that's really difficult to match consistently, the way that Dylan Brooks does at least. But offensively, you know, the last few games excluded, again, over the overall sample size of the season, it's been Dylan Brooks' worst offensive season of his career. And the unfortunate thing about Dylan Brooks is he has unshakable confidence. I say that's unfortunate because even when he's in a season-long shooting slump, that's not going to stop him from shooting the basketball most nights. So you're looking at a situation where Dylan Brooks is an important piece of this Grizzlies team. He contributes to winning, but in the obvious shooting categories that are fairly easy to keep up with, he is not successful, at least not compared to where he has been in the past or where fans think he should be. So as valuable as Dylan is, you know, looking at potential first-round matchups, maybe the Grizzlies take on the Lakers, maybe the Grizzlies take on the Clippers, maybe the Grizzlies take on the Pelicans, the Warriors, whoever it might be, a lot of these teams have at least one perimeter player that can score in bunches. They're going to need Dylan Brooks to try to offset that production in order to have any chance in a first-round playoff series. So Dylan is that necessary evil, which is fitting of somebody that is known as Dylan the Villain. He is a piece that they need to be successful, but they also need him to be able to be more careful and aware of his offensive production so that his defensive capabilities are best maximized.
For a moment, so we're making our way towards the playoffs, and we know that the play gets hot and heavy, and it gets very intense. Do you think Dylan will let his emotions get the best of him, or do you think he'll be, quote-unquote, on his best behavior to give the Grizzlies a chance to win and to go far in this playoff run for this season?
One of the things about Dylan Brooks, man, is you can count on him to be himself, right? Like I said, he is unapologetically himself. So I think he'll keep walking the line, which is something that Dylan has done throughout his Memphis Grizzlies career. We have to remember, he's the longest tenured Grizzlies player now. So ever since he came into the league as a second-round pick and he had that chip on his shoulder coming from Oregon, he is going to be a guy that the way that he plays allows for him to do things that he shouldn't be able to do, at least in terms of his physical talent. Some of the baskets that he makes, some of the plays that he makes at the rim offensively, he shouldn't physically be able to do it, but he just has such a strong will and confidence in himself that it manifests in a lot of different ways, and some of them are not always desirable. So do I think that he is an intelligent person who understands that the playoffs are not the time to get your technical fouls in? Yeah, I think he understands that, but I also think he plays NBA basketball and basketball overall in such a fashion that he can't always control himself when it comes to that aspect, and depending on the matchup, that could create some issues, right? The Warriors are a great example. If it's Grizzlies Warriors in the first round again, or as Grizzlies Warriors again, but this time in the first round, you know, Dylan Brooks is going to be in a situation where he has to, for at least four games, go up against Draymond Green and the like, and you know the Warriors don't like Memphis. So it'd be different if he's playing a team that they don't have that kind of rivalry with. I'm confident that Dylan is going to be as on his best behavior as he can be, with the understanding that that phrase means something different to Dylan Brooks than maybe it does to other players.
You mentioned a key word, rivalry. We've seen a lot of rivalries throughout the course of the history of the NBA. Lakers-Celtics, Lakers-Pistons, Celtics Pistons, Lakers Bulls, Celtics 76ers, Bulls Knicks, Knicks Heat, Bulls Heat, just to name a few. Do you see the Warriors and the Grizzlies having the potential of being in that list in terms of rivalries in the NBA, or do you think this is only going to be like maybe a 2-year, 3-year run?
Potential. I think potential is the key word there. They're not on the level of those rivalries yet. But I do think there's a possibility. You know, if there's another playoff series between those two, it goes seven games this time. It's really competitive. You know, there's a lot of previously laid groundwork that would enable that to jump up a level or two if it were to come to that. Golden State, for whatever reason, I think that they see this organization in the Memphis Grizzlies as a team that is not really actually a threat to them, or if they do see them as a threat, they have a really good way of just trying to needle the Grizzlies and get them frustrated by saying they're not a threat. The Warriors like to show off their four fingers. Klay Thompson did that the last time the Grizzlies played the Warriors for the four rings that the Golden State Warriors have, all those sorts of things. Memphis has no rings, right? And I do think that a championship would allow for Memphis to say, here we are, we're ready for this. But that's not going to happen until the Grizzlies beat the Warriors in general, unless somebody else beats the Warriors. So Memphis needs to kind of get over that final boss, if that makes sense. On their way to true NBA Finals contention, they have to get past Golden State in some way, shape, or form. And until that happens, you know, the Warriors will always have those fingers to hold up, saying that they've done it in more meaningful games than the Grizzlies have.
All right, and then let's move along now to someone who has been meaningful for the Grizzlies in terms of not just his defense, but causing matchup problems with his long-range shooting, Jaren Jackson Jr. Man, what another phenomenal year for Jaren. Again, not only getting the points in the paint, but also getting points with his range and, of course, the defense leading the league in blocks per game. Give me your thoughts on Jaren and his season.
A massive season in terms of another leap. We talked about that earlier with Desmond Bane, and I think that Jaren is another great example of that. And it's really taken off over the last 10 to 12 games, partly because of Ja's suspension. He wasn't with the team. But he's really kind of evolved into this monstrous two-way threat who on one end of the floor defensively, you know, he should be the defensive player of the year. Now, if you want to make an argument for Brook Lopez or somebody like that, I think you can have a logical conversation. But in my opinion, the numbers, your eyes, not very many bigs are capable of doing what Jaren Jackson Jr. is capable of doing on the defensive end of the floor. And then on the flip side, you mentioned it, he's a walking mismatch. If you pair him with a center like Jonas Valanciunas from the Pelicans, Jaren's going to eat him alive in the pick and roll all game. He's not athletic enough to stay with him. If you put a four man on Jaren, Jaren is 6'11", 245 pounds. He has such a physical size advantage, and he has a decent enough handle that whether it's in the post or from the three-point line and driving to the rim, he can use his frame and his size in a variety of ways. He's not just a three-point shooter now. He is a dominant physical force on a night-to-night basis because he's better picking and choosing his spots in terms of matchups. So I've been very impressed with Jaren. That contract extension that he signed, essentially $100 million, but it's descending in value. That's only going to look better and better and more valuable as that contract goes if Jaren keeps playing this way. Oh, by the way, remember, Jaren is 23 years old, even though he's in his fifth season in the NBA. He is a 23-year-old young man. So still room for growth over the next couple of seasons with Jaren, which is exciting to say because this year has been a growing season. And, you know, he looks a lot like Giannis Antetokounmpo at times. Not as good as Giannis. He's not an MVP candidate just yet. But he has a similar game right now in terms of how he can dominate on both ends of the floor physically.
Indeed, Jaren is, as you say, he makes the case for being a candidate for the league defensive player of the year, and hopefully the Grizzlies can lock him down for a long-term deal. And speaking of somebody that they can have the potential to lock up for a very long time, and that's the head coach of the Grizzlies, Taylor Jenkins. Considering what Taylor has gone through this year with the Ja Morant situation and the other things that have happened with the team, Memphis clearly is going to be in the playoffs. Give me your thoughts on Coach Jenkins and his season.
Nobody other than Mike Brown in Sacramento has had a better season. I think when it comes to Coach of the Year, Mike Brown's going to be the choice. He makes the playoffs for the first time in 16 years or whatever it is. I think that's understandable. So shout out to the Kings, light the beam, all that sort of stuff. He should be the head coach or the Coach of the Year. I think Taylor Jenkins should finish second, and I think it's kind of crazy that he's not talked about more in that way. You hear folks talk about Mazzulla from Boston, Oklahoma City's head coach, and other names get put in front of Taylor on a fairly consistent basis, and I don't understand it. He has not had any of his starters. I think Dylan Brooks maybe is the one that's been most consistent. But, you know, between Bane and Jaren and Ja and Steven Adams, all of these guys have missed considerable amounts of time, at least for sustained periods. Brandon Clark suffers an injury. And the Grizzlies have so much depth, and they're so good at developing their talent. That developmental staff is so elite at this stage. You know, David Roddy, Santi Aldama, all these different players, John Conchar, that have been asked to do more than they probably should be asked to do, and yet they're helping produce for a basketball team that's won 50 games, that is likely to be the number two seed in the Western Conference in the NBA playoffs. I don't get why he doesn't get more love. He doesn't have an MVP candidate on the roster like Mike Malone does, or like the Celtics, or the 76ers, or the Bucks do. All of those teams have guys that you can make legitimate arguments could be the MVP of this league. Ja Morant was in that conversation, but the second half of the year, for a variety of reasons, that's tailed off. You know, Ja may not even be All-NBA anymore. So you could be looking at a Grizzlies team that is number two in the NBA, in the Western Conference in particular, excuse me. They're like number five or so in the NBA. They may not have a single All-NBA team member. And – if by definition that means that the players are good but maybe not as great as others, the coaching job must be a pretty phenomenal one. So Taylor Jenkins deserves his flowers. Like I said, Mike Brown, Sacramento Kings, I think it's a historic season for them. He deserves that recognition. Taylor Jenkins should finish second. Will he? I don't know, but he would get my vote for sure.
Yeah, definitely. I mean, Taylor, you can put him up there with the coaches that have done a great job in this NBA season. Of course, Mike Brown is at the cream of the crop with the Sacramento Kings. Of course, Michael Malone in Denver, also Doc Rivers in Philly, also Mike Budenholzer with Milwaukee, of course, Joe Mazzulla with the Boston Celtics. And, you know, we talked again, I mentioned earlier about generational talent. Ja Morant, we know his talent. We know he's a generational talent, signing that exclusive Supermax extension this past offseason, that the new contract is going to kick in next season. We know about the issues. We know what he's gone through. We're not going to repeat that same song again. But what I will ask you is this, Joe. I know you've been covering the Grizzlies and following them for a long time. I want to ask you specifically about the treatment that he received in Florida. I know he was only there for maybe several days, 5 or 6 days or something like that, but do you have any insights on what treatment he received during his time in Florida?
Sure. He was there a little over a week, I believe. And he, you know, it was a lot of, sounded like social anxiety, stress, how to handle and cope with that stress. You know, counseling, not to talk out of turn, I'm not a counselor professionally or a therapist. It's something that is ongoing. Right? Like when you go to therapy or when you go to try to get help, you don't just go for a week and say, oh, I'm magically cured. And Ja Morant, to his credit, has never said that. He has talked about how it's a day-to-day operation. And if you watch Ja interact with the media, if you watch him on the court playing the game, he just looks different now than he did before all of this happened. His personality has shifted a bit. He's more intrinsic. He blocks out a lot of the pregame and postgame attention potential developments. He's not as active on social media. I think that it's an ongoing process for him, and it's one that is not anywhere near complete. And where I'm hopeful is that the media continues to empathize with him. Not necessarily if he did anything wrong criminally, right? Like a Washington Post article came out again this week talking about, you know, the issues from this past summer. Nothing in terms of new information necessarily, but it just continues to be brought up, all of these circumstances that at best Ja put himself in a bad situation, right? Like, even if you want to give him the benefit of the doubt, innocent until proven guilty, all those sorts of things, he shouldn't be, as a two-time NBA All-Star starter, be punching 17-year-olds in the face. Like, I think that's a fair thing to say, even as a person who covers the team and follows the team pretty closely. And Ja understands that. So I think that with him, it's an ongoing process. He's trying to balance who he was as a basketball player and as a personality with who he has to be moving forward. So much of what he was doing was inappropriate at best, illegal at worst, and again, there is no evidence of that being accurate, but those are some of the accusations that were thrown out against him. He has to find a way to move forward and merge what was so great about what Ja has been these first four seasons in the league with what he needs to be moving forward if he wants to truly be the next face of the National Basketball Association as guys like Steph Curry, LeBron James start to age out as Ja enters his
for a moment. We know that his father, T, has been very active at Grizzlies games since Ja has entered the NBA. What has T's presence been like at the Grizzlies games since Ja has been out of the facility in Florida? Has T continued to be himself, or has T kind of pulled back as well, as you mentioned about Ja pulling back and not being so presence on social media? What's the status with his father, T?
I think it's more muted, right? Similar to Ja in terms of how just a little bit more intrinsic. You know, when Ja returned to the lineup, they wore those Redemption hoodies, hoodies that said Redemption with Ja's picture on them. And, you know, that was met with mixed reviews. I think that he's still there supporting his son, right? And one of the things that I got a kick out of throughout all of the coverage of this was how T. Morant needs to do more. Ja Morant is a grown man, right? Like, he's 23 years old. When I was 23 years old, my parents could give me all sorts of counsel, advice, but I was a grown man. You know, and I'm going to do what I want to do. I'm on my own. And Ja, obviously, different situation in terms of wealth and socioeconomic status, all those sorts of things. But Ja is kind of the figurehead of that family now because of the impact he has economically and the generational wealth that he has the potential to accrue if he handles himself the right way moving forward. So Ja Morant is going to do what Ja Morant wants to do. T. Morant, his father, can give advice and counsel, do the best that he can, but it's going to be up to Ja Morant to take accountability for these actions. And Ja has done that to this point. All T can be is a supportive parent at this stage and be there for his son, which is what he has done consistently, maybe not in the exact same manner, but he is still there for Ja, and that is a good thing to see as Morant works through these issues.
Indeed, it is a good thing to see T. Morant work with his son, and we're just hoping and praying that, you know, better, bigger and brighter and better days lie ahead for Ja Morant as he continues, as you stated so beautifully, Joe. You know, it's not something that is just here today, gone today. It's just an ongoing process. It's a day-to-day process, and hopefully that, as you said, Ja will find better ways to cope with the anxiety and the stress that he's dealing with. I mean, so young and to be given so much in such a short amount of time, that's definitely a lot to deal with. And we can do is just pray and hope for the best for him. And I want to talk now about FedEx Forum for a moment. There are a lot of great arenas in the NBA. There's the Chase Center in San Francisco, which is home to the Golden State Warriors. There's Madison Square Garden in New York City, home to the New York Knicks. You also have the Crypto.com arena, which is home to the Los Angeles Clippers and the Los Angeles Lakers. And there's countless other NBA arenas, just to name a few. What makes FedEx Forum among the best in the NBA?
It's a very personal experience. There's not really a bad seat in the house, whether you're at the tippy top against the back of the arena, which I've been in the past, or whether you're down on the court, which I've also had a chance to do in the past as well. There is no bad seat. You feel like you're part of the action. There's a real strong energy. They've done a good job updating the video boards, the audio stuff, all those sorts of things, while still maintaining that personal experience and connection to the game. They get Memphis there with the Grizzlies organization, and that sounds silly to say out loud, but it's not generic. There are Memphis-specific things, songs that are played. The overall energy is very special within the city. The connection goes all the way back to the very first playoff run that they had with Pau Gasol, and then obviously making and winning a playoff series with Zach Randolph. All of that adds up to now, where people still remember those times, have started bringing their children, and, you know, that generational fandom that you want to see is starting to develop. And FedEx Forum is a wonderful place to attend a basketball game because of the connection that you can make to the atmosphere around you as well as the game itself. They don't call it the grindhouse for nothing, right? When you go to FedEx Forum, you know that you are in for a fight, not just against the Memphis Grizzlies, but at times it can feel like you're fighting the city of Memphis itself. And that this particular season has resulted in the best home court advantage in the NBA. Nobody in the NBA has as good of a home record as the Memphis Grizzlies. So FedEx Forum is a tough place to play, and that's especially going to be true with the playoffs starting up here next week. Grizzlies have home court advantage, at least for the first series coming up.
Indeed, that crowd is going to be rocking at FedEx Forum, and one of the best things about that venue is that it's located right on Beale Street, so that's definitely going to be very interesting.
Oh, yeah,
right there.
And,
that does help indeed. And stay with the city of Memphis for a moment. We know Memphis has a great sports history, of course, with basketball, University of Memphis. But I want to ask you about the NBA's popularity in Memphis, of course, with Ja Morant and with the success in recent years with the Grizzlies. What's the NBA's popularity like in Memphis?
It's never been higher. Ja Morant brings national attention to the team that has never existed before. He's a Nike-sponsored athlete, has his own shoe coming out. He has a sponsorship with Powerade. He is all over the place in terms of national media. Obviously, that's slowed down a little bit the last couple of months with the issues that we've talked about on the show. But he is a player that brings a lot of eyes to the product. And, you know, whether it's ESPN having a Memphis Grizzlies day last season, whether it's the dramatic increase in national televised games, the Grizzlies are a hot ticket, and they've never been more popular nationally. On the local scale, it's pretty much the same. Maybe they're a little bit more popular. I would say kids maybe are a little bit more into the Grizzlies than they have been in the past. But again, with Memphis in particular, the Grit and Grind Grizzlies really kind of started that process back in the 2010, 2011, 2012 seasons. And this is just an evolution of that, right? Obviously, all good things must come to an end. Marc Gasol, Zach Randolph, Tony Allen, all out of the league. Mike Conley, towards the end of his career, I think he's with the Minnesota Timberwolves now. So you look at that team and that roster, and it really started something special, and it's continued and been amplified with Ja Morant and the crew that are currently inhabiting FedEx Forum. So it's as popular as it's ever been nationally, and I think it's safe to say that it's the same thing in the city as well.
Awesome, and you heard it from him. He is Joe Mullinax. He is the co-host of the Locked On Grizzlies podcast dedicated to covering the NBA's Memphis Grizzlies, and he's also a Memphis Grizzlies columnist for Bluff City Media and an NBA writer for the Step Back in SB Nation NBA. Thank you so much again for taking time out of your busy schedule to be with us on the program. Just tell everybody what's going on over at Locked On Grizzlies, as well as Bluff City Media, the Step Back in SB Nation NBA.
Sure. Well, you can subscribe, rate, comment, like, review, all those sorts of things, wherever you get your podcast with Locked On Grizzlies. We're going to have an episode every single day here in April, so you can get up every morning and start your day with Locked On Grizzlies. Again, wherever you get podcasts, as well as on YouTube. Over at Bluff City Media, you can join over at Bluff City Media, get access to our insider content as the playoffs get underway. $5 a month, that's not bad at all, to get wonderful work, not just from myself, but other members of what was formerly known as Grizzly Bear Blues, that covered the Memphis Grizzlies for SB Nation. Now they're a part of Bluff City Media. You know, just lots of great content over at Bluff City Media. And between that and Locked On Grizzlies, we will have you more than ready for whoever the Memphis Grizzlies take on in the first round of the playoffs, I promise. So add Joe Mullinax on Twitter, follow all of my work there, and make sure you're checking out Locked On Grizzlies as well as Bluff City Media.
Awesome. Tell everybody, Joe, where they can find you on social media, as well as Locked On Grizzlies, Bluff City Media, as well as the Step Back and SB Nation NBA.
Sure. There's a lot of Twitter accounts, so I'll be honest. I'll just say if you go to at Joe Mullinax, you can find everything there. I tweet out the episode for Locked On Grizzlies there every day. Anytime there's Bluff City Media work, I retweet it there. So a one-stop shop, at Joe Mullinax, and then you can follow those other accounts from there.
Awesome. You heard it from him. He is Joe Mullinax. He's from the Locked On Grizzlies podcast, as well as Bluff City Media and the Step Back and SB Nation NBA. Joe, again, thank you so much for taking time out of your busy schedule to be with us on the program. If ever you want to come back on, feel free to let us know.
Absolutely. Happy to do it. Thanks for having me.
We'll be back with more right after.
Bane, he ran right out of the play. Smart play by Desmond Bane. Bane now in his third season. He is an issue.
Yes, he is. Because he's gotten so much better at putting that ball on the floor.
Tyus Jones with Jaren Jackson running their half-court set. Of course, a great three-point shooter, Desmond Bane, and he's going to the line again. Desmond Bane trying to bang his way to it, and he got it. And great look for Bane. Wide open. Bane, he'll go to the rim. Why not? Nobody stopped him. Bane trying to get to the rim and will again. Bane and more in the paint. Bane, good bait. It'll be tapped away by Jonas just to keep it away. And now Dylan Brooks gets the triple. Second chance points. It'll be Dylan Brooks. You know he's aggressive.
He's 3 of 3 from three.
Brooks and Trey battling through the pick. And it'll be a three-point opportunity for Dylan Brooks. Dylan Brooks in traffic with the flip.
Yep. That's a heck of a shot by Dylan Brooks.
On the deflection, Jaren Jackson Jr. And he does not get the roll, but second chance points. You just brought it up. This young man can hit that shot all the time, and that's Jaren Jackson Jr. Toss it inside, Jaren Jackson Jr.
See, now he's going to use his physicality. This is what I'm talking about.
Jaren Jackson wants to go back to a strong side, doesn't he? He got the left hand, and he worked it well. He's a righty. It'll be Jaren Jackson Jr. The floater will work. He wanted to go back to Jaren Jackson. And he'll get the layup. Bang. Thought about the three. It'll be Jaren Jackson. And he'll get the runner. Here comes that high screen for Jaren Jackson. And he got the layup out of it.
145 over 92.
180 over 111.
182 over 100.
And I had a heart attack and a cardiac arrest. And then a stroke.
This is what high blood pressure looks like. You might not feel its symptoms, but the results from a heart attack or stroke are far from invisible or silent.
My memory is shot.
When I woke up, I couldn't speak.
I can't button up a shirt. I can't run.
I've had to learn to swallow again.
That's the only movement that I have. And I'm 33, so I never see this coming.
If I would have followed a treatment plan, I would not be in this situation.
Had I done this, had I done that, hell, I messed up.
Get back on your plan or talk with your doctor to create an exercise, diet, and medication plan that works for you. Go to loweryourhbp.org.
Head to toe, everything's changed. Head to toe.
All right, everybody, that's going to do it for another exciting edition of The Robinson Show. Once again, a big special thank you to Joe Mullinax, co-host of the Locked On Grizzlies podcast and columnist for Bluff City Media. These outlets cover the NBA's Memphis Grizzlies, and he is also an NBA writer for the Step Back in SB Nation NBA. Once again, a big special thank you to Joe. And until next time, remember, put God first in everything you do, and you can't go wrong. Until next time, stick to the script. I'm out. Peace.